Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Our first guest on the show today is our good friend Grant F. Smith from the Institute for Research Middle East Policy. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me back once again.
Good. Yeah, very happy to have you here. And let me see. I'm trying to pull up your bio so I can say the name of some of your books. Here, the latest is Divert, Numek, Zalman Shapiro, and the Diversion of U.S. Weapons-Grade Uranium into the Israeli Nuclear Weapons Program. Oh, yeah. That's the Institute for Research Middle East Policy at IRMEP.org. And that's the subject of this article today, running at antiwar.com. It's called Death of the Masked Man, about a CIA officer named John Haddon. Who was John Haddon?
Good, okay. Well, he was a CIA station chief in Tel Aviv during the Six-Day War. And he has, he passed away last year almost unnoticed by any journalist, except for his local newspaper up in Maine. And so it was very interesting looking around at all the material. He was outspoken for a CIA guy, particularly one in such sensitive positions. But he had been summoned by the head of the Mossad in 67 before the war, and he was very blunt telling the Israelis that not only should they not attack, but that if they did, both Russia and the United States would be opposing them. And stood up in a way that was uncharacteristic of the way most U.S. politicians and State Department and government people stand up. He had suggested that kind of like in the Suez crisis a decade before, that the U.S. position was they should not attack and that U.S. aid might be on the line if they did and not to surprise the U.S. So it's interesting because none of this is mentioned or was mentioned in his his obituary, along with a lot of other very interesting confrontations that he had with Israeli intelligence. So one of the interesting things about what actually happened that his son transcribed from a series of interviews, and I believe he published them only posthumously, was that during the Six-Day War, someone had called from LBJ's CIA on a weekend and tried to convince Haddon that he should authorize or tell the Mossad that the U.S. was okay if they took some sort of drastic action, and realizing that this is probably some junior political appointee, Haddon just dropped that into the shredder and said that there were many such moments in his career where he was on the spot like that. So that was a very interesting quote from his son, who took some 20 hours of taped interviews of his somewhat reluctant father about 10 years ago, but only coming out now. So why is it important now? I think it's important now because there's another spy who's just receiving dozens of obituaries. And it was a guy that John Haddon really went up against as part of someone's job pursuing U.S. interests and trying to rein in the Israelis, and that was Avraham Shalom. Shalom's name formerly was Avraham Bender, and his glowing obituaries talk about how he accompanied Rafi Eitan to kidnap Adolf Eichmann in Buenos Aires and bring him to Israel for a trial for war crimes. He was a Nazi. But they don't mention the fact that the same Avraham Bender, who later became somewhat critical of Israel's treatment of Palestinians, that he was also one of the team that went into this plant that we've talked about before, Numek in Pennsylvania, to help steal weapons-grade uranium. So you've got all these accolades and sort of glowing obituaries about Shalom, nothing about Haddon, and all of Shalom, a.k.a. Bender's actions targeting the U.S. have been edited out. So I found that very interesting and kind of tried to contrast the two obituaries and histories in this article.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, so there's a lot to go back over there, a lot of interesting stuff. First of all, 1967, well, geez, Israel had to defend themselves because the Arabs were trying to push them into the sea. What's in controversy about that?
Well, you know, I know you're laying out the bait there, Scott, but virtually all of the historians that come on your show, the ones who actually know something about the event, no longer even call it a preemptive or preventive war, since the Egyptians really showed no sign or means to attack, even though some of them were ragtag members or massed on the border. It now looks more and more like a sneak attack that was engaged in to accomplish some of the things that Israel did accomplish, which was territory.
We'll be right back with Grant F. Smith from IRMEP in just a sec. Hey, y'all, Scott here. Like I told you before, the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org represents the best of the libertarian movement. Led by the fearless Jacob Hornberger, FFF writers James Bovard, Sheldon Richman, Wendy McElroy, Anthony Gregory, and many more write the op-eds and the books, host the events, and give the speeches that are changing our world for the better. Help support the Future Freedom Foundation. Subscribe to their magazine, The Future of Freedom. Or to contribute, just look for the big red donate button at the top of FFF.org. Peace and freedom. Thank you. Oh, my, how time flies. Let's see here. I got to get back to Grant F. Smith from the Institute for Research Middle East Policy. Boy, oh, boy, is that a website full of PDFs of FOIA documents about Israel's policy in the United States of America going back generations. Grant F. Smith. That's why it's called the Institute for Research. It ain't just a nice name. It's apt. And so, yeah, we're talking about, and we're going to get to Israeli nuclear smuggling and the rest of that in just a second here. But we're talking about this article that Grant wrote that's running at antiwar.com today, Death of the Masked Man. Oh, Death of the Masked Men. CIA's John Haddon ignored as Israeli spy Avraham Ben-Dor celebrated. And so part of this story is about the death of this CIA guy and how all the obituaries, if there were any, didn't really make any mention of all the great things that he'd done, which most of which were, I guess, trying to thwart the Israelis. And so where we were interrupted at the break was the part where Israel started the 1967 war. And I'll just go ahead and mention here real quick. I got the full quote in context here from the Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs. That's mfa.gov.il is the whole thing from an Israeli government website. The speech from August 8, 1982 by Prime Minister Begin at the National Defense College, where he admits that, we just decided to attack Egypt, and no, there's no real evidence that they were going to attack us. We just decided that we wanted to, and so there you go, no point lying about it. So that's what we were talking about. But then so it gets all anecdotey because this guy Haddon was there and told them, hey, don't do it. America's and Russia both will agree that we're going to be pissed off at you if you attack Egypt. And then they went ahead and did it anyway. Is that right, Grant?
That's right. There's more detail that I didn't write about, which was, you know, you had one of the Egyptian government officials traveling to Washington to try and, you know, iron things out. When he finds out that the attack has begun. You've definitely got the money quote there. And it really destroys some of your other guests have mentioned the whole case for preventive or preemptive war is in some case tied to the mythology of the 1967 Six-Day War. So
right.
It's really under attack by the facts. But the fact that this person in charge with the highest intelligence post in country was communicating what he thought were the marching orders, and he was being end-runned and also fed kind of bogus operations instructions from the CIA on weekends is interesting detail about the environment over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, too, about... The anecdote there, I don't know if there's much more to elaborate on there, but what you mentioned about him getting instructions on the weekend from some political appointee flunky over at CIA headquarters or somewhere telling him to give the Israelis carte blanche, basically, and he just refused to carry out the order. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's not clear from the transcription exactly what that action was. You know, you got to hope it wasn't, oh, why don't you use some of the nuclear weapons that we know you have? You got to hope it wasn't that. But it's definitely interesting that, according to him, you had what he referred to as gung-ho idiots at the CIA, proconsuls basically, trying to get him to do something that not even the DCI wanted. So that's an interesting thing. The interesting thing about Haddon and the fact that, again, nobody did any obituaries except for one local newspaper was the fact that he was pretty vocal. It's not like there isn't a track record in LexisNexis that any journalist could have grabbed. He had this extensive interview with the BBC about this entire theft of uranium, and he never equivocated. He never backed down about his belief based on thousands of CIA documents, which have never been released, about how the same team that had nabbed Eichmann also nabbed all of this uranium. And the record is clear. There are actual letters which have been released showing the team going into the plant at the invitation of its operator when during the year of the highest loss. So it was interesting that he was so candid and so dismissive of the Israelis, comparing, you know, lifting all of this uranium is a much easier task than lifting the Nazi war criminal from the streets of Buenos Aires. And he was also didn't share much love with them. He mentioned them as a special case that, you know, he called them, they can go out and murder people and do all sorts of things we can't do. They get a lot done. And then he complained about their intelligence, saying Israeli intelligence is our main source of intelligence, unexamined, and that's another problem. So I found it oddly echoing a lot of the things that have come out in Jeff Stein's Newsweek profiles that have been, you know, circulating over the last couple of weeks about how this mistrust, this ongoing espionage, how it's affecting this drive to have visa-free entry and things like that. It seems as though the basic sense hasn't changed very much. So, but, you know, comparing that to all of these loving biographies of one of the operatives who penetrated the plant, which is Avraham Bender, who changed his name to Avraham Shalom, is a real interesting thing, because these same American journalists who could do a credible job or could have done a credible job on what was essentially Bender's counterpart, if you look at the relative size of each country and its bureaucracies, they just neglected to do that. You've got, you know, basically behind the paywall over at the Jerusalem Post, there's a recent piece by their top national defense writer, Yossi Melman, basically admitting the truth of all of the nuclear diversions, including NUMEC. But, you know, it's just the fact that there's all of this fawning obituary and homages to this Shin Bet operative and John Haddon, the guy who basically exposed him publicly in the media, is utterly ignored is just astounding. But unfortunately, it's kind of typical. It's not something that, you know, readers of Anti-War or other alternative news sites wouldn't expect.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true, but it's the public narrative that really matters, you know, the one that gets across there. And now, so it's interesting that it's the same guy who was the first to out what was going on at the NUMEC facility, is that right?
He was, there were two CIA officials who came out publicly. One was Carl Duckett, who is the director of operations, who told the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that it was the CIA's belief that a diversion had occurred. And John Haddon was the other one, who was the CIA Tel Aviv station chief. And presumably he would have been in charge of some of the sampling that took place outside of Dimona which revealed the presence of weapons-grade uranium that matched the same signature of what was being given to this NUMEC facility to process into submarine fuel. So he was unequivocal in his condemnation of that when he discussed it with the press. The authority of these two insiders, at the same time that the CIA, they were leaving the CIA, and at the same time the CIA was, and still does, it's fighting never to release any of its own multitude of files on the incident, but their credibility really helps carry this to a head in 1978-1979 as the Carter administration finally passed information to the attorney general and said, you know, basically we've either got to prosecute this or let it go because now the statute of limitations is running out. So he played a role in underscoring the fact that something bad had happened just by his willingness to go public about it.
And now Zalman Shapiro still just lives in Philadelphia, is that right? And
yeah,
he's not in trouble?
He's not in trouble. He's not worried. He's still in Pittsburgh. Every once in a while, an intrepid reporter will call him up and say, okay, Zal, please, let's admit everything. Why don't you tell your real story? Kind of the way Arnon Milchan recently admitted that he was also a nuclear spy.
Yeah, don't worry. You have complete impunity. I mean, immunity. Just go ahead and...
Well, you can pretty much say that.
Yeah.
We're
out of time, Grant. We got to run. Thank you, though, very much.
All
good
right,
talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. Bye.
Check out Grant today at antiwar.com, y'all. Death of the Masked Men. Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Liberty.me, the brand new social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features nightly classes, guides, events, publishing, and so much more. Sign up now and you get the first 30 days free. And if you click through the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org or use the promo code Scott when you sign up, you'll save $5 per month for life. That's more than a third off the regular price. And hey, once you sign up, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.